Mini episode 1625 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1625. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with you, with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my pal, FDH Hoops analyst Ben Hsu. We are here to break down, to review the 2023 NBA Finals, which went, I think, largely as we expected, as far as the specifics of it. As far as the outcome, we both had that nailed. And that takes me to my thought from the championship parade. Coach Michael Malone at one point, I believe, leading the crowd in a chant of "Dynasty, Dynasty." Well, I fully expect that Denver is going to qualify in some sort, in that with more titles in the next couple of years. How many in a row? Don't know. Maybe we'll get into that. I think they're going to qualify. The one thing that I'm dubious of, because a team in the NBA has never come close to this, I don't think it's going to be 9 in a row. So they are not nearly the dynasty that my man Ben Hsu is, because in the course of doing these previews and recaps of the finals together since 2015, it's one of these things where I have gone 7-2 over that stretch. And normally that would be enough to pat myself on the back, but I can't do that because Ben is now 9-0. We both picked Denver in this series. I picked Denver in a sweep. It turned out to be a gentleman's sweep. I don't remember the exact number you said. I think you said 6. So I think you had it going one more than it did. I had it going one less than it did. But congratulations, Ben Hsu. Congratulations are not nearly strong enough for 9 in a row. There are no words.
Again, there are no words. But I think it's essentially at this point, the only thing I got to say is next year we're going to do it again.
That's right. That's right. We got another one coming.
At least 10 in a row. But I mean, I kind of feel like, honestly, Rick, this was a very interesting series. Miami did make it a series, which I mentioned in our preview show. But it just kind of felt like what I think you and me both made the base assessment, which was Denver was arguably the best team in the league all season. They had that little slip up in those 15 games nearing the tail end where teams like Milwaukee and Boston were able to overtake them in total wins. But this isn't really a super surprising sort of scenario.
No, it's not, because again, this is the first springtime of having the full core here together healthy, really since the bubble in 2020, and they made it to the West Finals the last time. And I tell you what, let's do this a little bit unconventional. We can get into the series a little bit here subsequently, but I like to go big picture on this, because if we're looking at your chances of going 10-0 next year and my chances of going 8-2 in the last 10 years, it's one of those things where I think the easier path for both of us is if Denver is back and as a substantial favorite as they were this year. And looking at it big picture, I don't see any reason for that to change, because this is one of these things where, again, it just seems like there's more talk of a potential dynasty right now than there generally is when a first-time team wins it. But I think it's for very good reason. Again, looking at the fact that, again, Murray missed 21 and 22 in the playoffs here. They got him back for the first time in the playoffs since the bubble. Michael Porter Jr. hopefully has turned a corner in terms of his own health and the way that this team looks now. Aaron Gordon really coming into his own with them. KCP being an excellent addition. Bruce Brown, if they can hang on to him, which Michael Malone said at the parade that he would make sure that they did. So you look at it here, and they really do have all the makings of it. And you and I talked about this a little bit before the finals. The disintegration of the Eastern Conference powers in the playoffs here. Milwaukee looking like their best days are behind them with the core that they have. Boston being essentially a couple of big question marks at this point as far as how they go forward. ditto Philadelphia. The Cavs going out in the first round, which was a disappointment. The Knicks, yes, making it to the second round, but, I mean, the fact that they couldn't get past the Heat, I think, tells you all you need to know. And we saw what this version of the Heat can do. There's talk about possibly Damian Lillard from your new hometown of Portland maybe migrating down to Miami, and maybe that would change things a bit. Maybe some of the other teams in the West will be tougher next year. But I don't see anything, Ben, that is going to change it right now to where we go into next June and we say Denver is the solid favorite again in the NBA Finals.
Right, and I think the major thing, too, is, like, there's still going to be a lot of free agency movement, a lot of big names, like, whether it's Lillard or Bradley Beal or, you know, some of the guys who are on sort of the outskirts looking in, like John Collins. So there are a lot of talented teams out there, Rick. The problem is I just think if you visually look at how Denver is set up to be successful, it's pretty much the road goes through Jokic at this point. And outside of Joel Embiid, I don't think there's really a great matchup for Joker. There's not really any great matchups that these other teams can really throw at Denver. And ultimately, the reason why I think they're probably, if they don't win next year or in subsequent years, it's going to be their health, because we have discussed that, you know, Porter Jr.'s had injuries for most of his career. Murray tore an ACL. Jokic has been relatively healthy for most of his career, but again, these are big men in the NBA. A lot of wear and tear on the body does exist, so we can't rule that he won't miss some time in the future. But it's just more in terms of, as much as we think the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference have a lot of great teams, it was kind of a very parity-driven year this year. So yeah. Unless some major sort of super team either comes together, I know, you know, if the Lakers could improve, get a guy like Fred VanVleet or Bradley Beal or just any sort of any sort of outside shooting could help them out. But at this pace, if you just look at the teams who are ready to compete right now, none of them really have a great matchup for Jokic at this point. It's very similar to the early 2000s with Shaq with the Lakers.
Very much so, and while it's a different position, it's very interesting because Jokic has a lot of the same skill set as far as the versatility of his game that LeBron had. And this is a thing where we've had this debate the last couple of years, Jokic or Giannis or Embiid maybe to whatever extent, certainly this year with Embiid winning MVP. But it's one of those things where I feel like that period of time, and I think it lasted pretty much throughout the 2010s, where we looked at it and we said LeBron is the best player in the league, that right now I think this is the first no-doubt moment we've had since whenever it was that LeBron kind of relinquished his grip on it. Because at this point in time, and this happens sometimes in the league, I think one of those times was in, 2007? Because I think Bill Simmons likes to talk about that when Dirk won MVP, but kind of had a bad playoff thing and the voting looked kind of stupid. Like, this happens sometimes where it's like a what were they thinking kind of a moment. I think Hakeem the 1 year got MVP. And then, Robinson got MVP. It was the other way around, and Hakeem kind of toyed with him in the playoffs. Like, these things happen sometimes. And I thought it was a dumb move at the time to take it away from Jokic, because I thought he was still number one. But it's just a consensus at this point in time that Jokic should have been the three-time MVP. And are you seeing it the same way that I am, that essentially, however long the reign of LeBron went, however long you consider it to be where he was the no-doubt number one player in the league, this moment marks the first time since then we have a no-doubt number one player in the league?
It's been a while, and I think we'll get there. And I know there's still going to be people who will make arguments. There's still arguments for guys like LeBron and Embiid to do it. It just feels like to the one thing that you can compare with LeBron is Jokic's playmaking ability and the ability for him to find his teammates and how well-balanced their team is at this current period of time. And I have a feeling, too, the one thing we will discuss, too, with the upcoming CBA, there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to lose a lot of their key contributors just because of the tax and just the salary cap coming in. And it's going to be – it's interesting because right now Denver, Rick, has kind of locked up most of their young core.
Yep.
And at this point, on top of that, if you look at sort of – I have a feeling there'll be at least two or three veterans who will, very similar to when Golden State and the Cavs were having their run, they'll join, or San Antonio too, they'll find a way to join the Nuggets at a cheap contract just so that they can guarantee themselves a good chance of a championship ring.
Yep, and I think in some cases it'll have to be the veteran minimum, but we had talked about that, I think, a little bit on our finals preview as far as how these teams were set up, and that, like you said, Denver, they can just kind of lock everybody in. They don't need to go outside. They're a machine right now with what they have, and if you could guarantee Denver that everybody they have is going to stay healthy the next couple of years, then, I mean, I think however long this plays out, what's it be, like 28? So, I mean, with his game, I mean, physical, you know, just being in the better shape he's been in the last couple of years has made more of a difference, and I don't see him going backwards on that. I mean, with his kind of a game, with athleticism not being as important to it, this is a guy who could be in his prime, his full prime, for up to another 6 years or so. So you look at it like three titles, you know, to follow this almost seems kind of modest with that being the case, because the rest of the league is going to be so handcuffed trying to beat a team, build a team to beat them. And it's funny because my initial thought, and probably yours and everybody else's, was just like, Golden State is going to be so screwed. They won't be able to keep their team together. It almost feels like with the spending that Golden State went on the last couple of years, that it was built, the new CBA, to combat yesterday's problem for the league. Golden State is now yesterday's problem for the league, and all the titles that they had ahead of them, they don't have those titles ahead of them anymore. The new monster is Denver, and the new CBA looks like it's just going to stack the deck for them.
Yeah, and there is a scenario, Rick, and a small percentage, but the way the league is set up, and I have a feeling this is weird to say, but it's got to be something that's definitely on some people's minds. It's been a long time since, like, the Celtics have won six consecutive championships in the early 60s, or late 60s, at some point in the 60s, that this is a team that is very doable at getting a three-peat or even a four-peat.
Yeah.
Because if they can remain healthy and they can continue to build, and again, too, the one major thing for them is just a lot of these guys who are, they've already paid Jokic the Supermax. Aaron Gordon's locked in long-term. KCP's locked in long-term. You know, Christian Braun, their rookie out of Kansas, played really well. He's locked up for a couple of years at probably a bargain rate contract at this point in the league. So there, and again, they'll have a lot of guys that will want to play for them. So salary, I don't think, is going to be a major issue. It's ultimately just going to come down to, can they stay healthy, and will another team find a way to kind of either stack the deck in their favor or find a way to hamper Jokic's ability right now.
Well, I keep saying this, and again, as self-congratulatory as it is, I'm going to keep saying it, that you and I had done a segment here a couple of years back on the show about player development in the league, that it was becoming more important than it had been in a long, long, long time. We cited Denver and Miami as success stories, San Antonio for what they did in their long run before things kind of, you know, fell apart and they had to rebuild, teams in the league at doing that. I think Toronto has been a success story at that by and large. It was a big key to them winning the championship. Yes, Kawhi Leonard put them over the top, but the development of the other players around him was key. And that's the whole thing. You're going to have a bunch of teams around the league having to imitate Denver's success story in terms of player development, because again, the ability to just go out and buy players, this is a thing where, as we talked about, and I will give credit because it's the first place that I'd seen it, but the Ringer podcast with Simmons and Russillo, where they were talking about it, that's what opened up my eyes to it, where they were like, whoa, this second apron is going to be a problem for a lot of teams out there. And I think it's just dawning on everybody here at this point. So like you said, it might be a matter of maybe you can talk some of these, you know, proud veterans, you know, who are still very good players, maybe you can talk them into taking the veteran minimum. That's what it's going to take in a lot of cases. It certainly seems like building out a structure that can compete with them in terms of player development, that's the way to go. If you can get guys, because that's a way that you can kind of lock up guys on the cheap who are going to be the contributors you need to round out your starting lineup, to say nothing of the rest of your rotation.
Right, and I think the major thing, too, is that Denver, again, reminds me a lot of San Antonio during the Duncan Robinson run, which is, yes, they don't have a lot of ego-driven players on that team. Yep. So if they do need additional capital or additional funds, it would not shock me to ever see Jokic or Murray's contracts get restructured or Aaron Gordon's contract get restructured. So it puts them in a very beneficial scenario right now. And again, I'm not saying that they're aren't a couple of trades in the NBA or free agency signings that won't put another team over the top. It's just the way that Denver won, and if they could consistently just stay and have that home court advantage throughout the playoffs, whether it's a 2 seed, a 3 seed, or a 4 seed, they're in good hands, because just having to go play at the altitude of Denver and the way that this team plays, it's very hard to compete against.
It definitely is. And you look at this series, and again, I was shocked that Miami was able to take game two. But it was a thing where, again, they ended up having enough things go their way down the stretch, enough things go against Denver down the stretch. It's funny that Denver played a pretty imperfect game in the clincher, but they managed to hang on anyways, which just shows you how hard it is to beat them, especially there. And I will give credit again to Ryan Russillo, as I was listening to a little bit of his post-finals podcast. He made a point. I'm bringing up what he said because it reminds me of something I said to you off air about the 2018 Cavs. Now, I think the Heat were obviously a much better version of LeBron's surrounding cast in 2018. For example, there was no Bam Adebayo on the 2018 Cavs, but you get past Butler and Bam, and it becomes a thing where Russillo was saying, and this is kind of what I was saying about the Cavs players at the time, if somebody told you one of those guys went for 0 points, you might not blink. If somebody told you they went for 20 points, you might not blink. Because it's a thing where the range in outcomes between these guys. So Strus, Martin, on a good night, they can give you what it takes to be very competitive with the Nuggets. Duncan Robinson as well. Tyler Hero certainly would have provided a better baseline for the offense had he been healthy. We'll stipulate that, but I mean, I don't think anybody argues that it would have helped them come much closer than they did. Miami's got a lot of players that, like, if it all breaks for you on the right night, maybe they can beat or at least be competitive with the best team in the league. And that's kind of how the 2018 Cavs were. You just weren't going to get too many nights where, you know, Jeff Green and George Hill and Jordan Clarkson, where the stars were on the line for enough of those guys on the same night to help them beat Golden State. It happened in one of the games in the 2017 finals with a similar cast where, of course, that team still had Kyrie Irving on it as well. But there are some similarities. I would say this was sort of a rich man's version of the surrounding cast that the Cavs had in 2018. And yet, when you're going up against a monster like Denver or a Golden State team that had stacked the deck with Kevin Durant, it ain't going to be enough. And I think that's what you and I were basically seeing going into this thing.
Right, and to be honest, and this is one thing I feel like got buried a little bit in this series, that Miami did. It had a heck of a run. Eric Spoelstra is a heck of a coach. They're set up for a couple more successful years in the Eastern Conference with Jimmy Butler and this team, because I'm almost 100% sure, Rick, they will get another superstar to play with Jimmy Butler at some point.
Yeah.
The big thing for me, honestly, is that they just kind of ran out of gas, honestly. Game two, as we discussed off-air, the experts kind of flip-flopped after that, saying Denver wasn't really for real, but my analogy of that game was, it felt more like game two was Miami did enough things right to win, but Denver kind of, you know, didn't play terribly either.
Yeah.
Outside of, you know, them getting blown out, didn't really strike me as anything. But it felt to me, and games three to game five were very apparently Miami's shooting just was not there.
Right.
I believe too, Rick, in game five at one point in the fourth quarter, they missed like 12 shots in a row.
Yeah.
Or something around that line. It was something, but they had at least had 8 consecutive possessions where they didn't get a single field goal. And I don't care who you are in any sort of basketball in this world, going 8 consecutive possessions and not getting a basket is not a good thing.
Right. You can't do that. I mean, in rare instances, like the end of Cavs-Warriors Game 7 in 2016, you can have, as long as it's futility for the other team on the end of the court, other end of the court, as was the case at the end of the game, nobody was making buckets, but generally that doesn't happen. But it's a thing in looking at it where, again, in Miami, we talked about this on the finals preview, they were flukishly bad at shooting in the regular season. Their regular season numbers were like clownishly bad, so I saw what they did in the playoffs maybe as a little bit of progression to the mean, because you're not going to have that many shooters be off for as much as they were during the regular season. But it still is a matter of, again, consistency, and that's what they have in common with the Cavs 2018 core. Everybody is not named Butler or Adebayo or maybe to whatever degree Tyler Hero. These guys, again, you know, I mean, Duncan Robinson, he might look like, Steph Curry the one game, and then he might look like a guy on a CBA roster in the next game. It's just a matter of whether the shots are dropping or not. And they don't have the consistency. They need another star in there. There's no substitute for star power. Eric Spoelstra is one of the greatest coaches. I mean, I think not just in the league right now, but I mean, I think he's etching his name on an all-time list here. I mean, I don't, top 10 would be a mouthful to say right now, but I mean, he might be climbing in on the top 20 the way that he's going. To be able to take that roster and maximize it. And the whole thing of like Heat culture, I mean, there really is something to it, but we're seeing the ceiling of it. We're seeing the ceiling of anybody's culture when they don't have what it takes to compete with Denver. The star power of Jokic, the star power of Murray, who is probably establishing himself as at minimum a fringe top 15 player in the league in his own right. And then the other guys in there, Porter and Gordon, and yes, I know Butler had the ankle injury that was suffered in the playoffs, but by the same token, a lot of his issues in the finals came with one of the things that I talked about in advance. They're going to put Aaron Gordon on him, and that's a thing that's not going to change from June to June in the years moving forward here. He's going to have to contend with that. If they make it back to the finals, he's going to know who's waiting for him, and that's not going to be easy.
Right, and it felt like, too, and we can note this through some of the earlier series, that Jimmy Butler didn't really have any great defenders against him in most situations.
Yes.
Like, I guess you would say the best defender they had was Jason Tatum for a period of time in the Boston series.
Mm-hmm.
But it very showed. I mean, like, well, his points per game was barely at 18 for this series. Like, he wasn't shooting well from three. He pretty much disappeared for most of game five until the final 4 minute mark.
Yeah.
So, and again, this is nothing against Jimmy Butler. It's just when you're having to carry a team like that and your other teammate shots aren't falling, you're not going to win. Is that just this? That sort of style would have worked in the late 80s, early 90s, early 2000s of the NBA, but in today's sort of hyper-efficient offensive basketball, you cannot afford to have long stretches of a game where you can't make shots.
Well, exactly. And again, I think this Denver team, the reason people are talking dynasty is that this is the first time we've seen a team that looks like what Golden State was, especially once they got Durant. This is the first time we've seen that in the last couple of years, and that there's been a little bit more parity at the top between then and now. Because I think we talked about this before, 2020 to 2022 was the first stretch since 76 to 78 in which there were six different teams in the finals in 3 years. You don't generally have that. And it's one of those things where I almost wonder if we kind of got lulled to sleep a little bit here when Giannis won the title in 2021. Like, oh, well, maybe a guy can do it and be considered an absolute top-level player at the game without having the three shot. But see, for Butler, he's never been a three-point ace. He's not now. He's much better when he can be a slasher, when he can kind of take it in a little bit there, and that's a thing. It turns out that actually remains a hole in the game of an otherwise great player, because in this era, if you don't do that, if you're the best player on the team and you're not much of a threat to spread the floor, that is something that makes it harder for your team to game plan effectively.
Yeah. And we've discussed this too, Rick. I think in at least 3 to 4 years, barring maybe like 1% of players, if you can't make a 3-point shot, you're not going to be on the floor in an NBA game.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it's like even guys, and we've seen like the transition to guys like Brook Lopez, Jokic can also be added there. He did not take a lot of threes early in his career.
Yep.
But now he's hitting them at a decent percentage, you know. And I think Bam will probably at some point start taking threes. If he pushes his range out a little bit, it's just more in terms of if you can't spread the floor in today's league and you can't bend defenses, it's really hard to stay on the floor because you can't be a player in today's era that you're essentially just a hole on the floor at this point.
Yeah, and again, for a team that might be back there against Denver in the next couple of years in the finals, I mean, I think Miami's got as good of a shot as anybody, looking at, like I said, the fact that the rest of the top of the East turned out to be a complete house of cards this year, a complete fraud. So there's no reason that Miami can't punch their way back through it again in the next couple of years, only to run into Denver again. And it is kind of funny to say this, but I mean, you talk about Adebayo maybe taking more threes. That's if he gets better at it, of course. But it's like the way for Miami to be able to progress as a team, a way that they can take a jump up. Again, you know, Butler, again, I don't say this in a negative sense. I mean, he is what he is as far as, like, I don't expect him to get better at threes at this point. I mean, he's going to probably continue to deliver at the same level the next couple of years. The biggest possibility for improvement from within is Bam, if he can do what you said and improve his three-point accuracy. And he's already one of the better secondary playmakers in the league at center. So it's a thing where studying the guy who beat him here, essentially, you know, what, and it's easier said than done, but Bam's got a better chance than most. If Bam can at least edge a little bit closer to, like, poor man's Jokic territory, that's the biggest probably path right there for Miami to take a jump up.
Right, and I think, too, it'll be interesting to see how Miami decides to build, because if they do make a trade to get another superstar, a portion of their core is going to be gone because of that trade, just sure, for contract matching purposes.
Sure.
So it's going to be really interesting to see that if they get a guy like Lillard, a guy like Bradley Beal, a guy like John Collins, just sort of guys that have the ability to score and make plays, but also at the same point, what really is ultimately going to occur is that you're going to have to give up guys. And essentially, Denver's in a situation where they're in an acquisition mode.
Yep.
More than anything else. And that's what makes it scary, because in most cases, when you win a title as a team, usually there is always the concern of core stability.
Sure.
And for the Nuggets, they pretty much have nothing to really truly worry about outside of injuries, because everyone's essentially locked up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're dealing from a position of strength, and because they are, I'm only saying because they are, I think they have probably four non-negotiables. Obviously, Joker and Murray, but I would put probably Gordon and Porter in there as well. Versus if you're Miami, you're talking about breaking up the core. But again, for as much as a lot of us fell in love with what they have based on, let's be perfectly honest, 1.5 series through the Eastern Conference playoffs, right? That was about it, basically, or 2.5 series, I guess we would say. Well, you include, so the three rounds of the playoffs, the three games they lost to Boston, really, they didn't have anybody show up in there. Outside of Butler and Adebayo, I mean, everybody's negotiable if you're Miami, right? I mean, they have to be if you're going to get that extra piece. And they've proven they can develop other guys, but the other guys you're talking about as far as at least being peripheral members of their quote-unquote core, I keep coming back to this, don't have the consistency to be non-negotiable players. If they had the consistency, they would be non-negotiable and wouldn't be moving anywhere.
Right, and I feel like the issue for Miami, though, is sadly for them, is that a percentage of that core has to go out in a deal, and on top of that, most of the core is, that's essentially how they got to the finals to begin with. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a very interesting way, because in terms of how they're going to build from their core, they got guys. It's just, in my opinion, on the outside looking in at the rest of the league, what they can offer, I really don't know who, outside of maybe the Wizards and Bradley Beal, are asking for essentially Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Caleb Martin, and a bunch of pick swaps at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't know where the value for that really lands, unless you're trying to give it to a team that's trying to rebuild and rebuild quickly. So I just, it's weird when you have two top flight guys, but you need a third, and you can't really make any legitimately big moves with this without gutting your current sort of, of roster.
Well, and Ben, that's the thing here, too, and that's, you and I have talked about this for years, the way that people slept on Cleveland-era David Griffin, because, I mean, to be able to do that, to be able to pick up guys, now, again, the moves that he was making, by and large, were more of an unspectacular nature once he had made the Kevin Love trade. But to be able to keep adding pieces when what you have is not that attractive to the rest of the league, again, there's a real art form to that. And Miami organizationally has been able to make good trades over the years. But like you said, there's not a whole long line of people who are lining up for what they have. I mean, they'd like to take guys like Robinson and Hero and these guys, but to think that those guys are going to get you back somebody that is going to be a difference maker for you. I mean, it could happen in the right deal if you catch the right team at the right time, but you are absolutely correct in pointing out that the path is not going to be easy for them because teams just don't value the assets that they have in that way, because I keep coming back to this. They all know that if these guys were more consistent, Miami would have everything they needed right now anyways.
Yeah, and that's what makes this hard when you're kind of, as a franchise, kind of have your hands tied trying to determine the best pathway, because you know your current roster is not good enough to win a title, but you also realize that you're giving up a lot of what made you good to get to this point. So Unless we see a superhuman next level move from Tyler Hero next season, or a combination of Duncan Robinson, Caleb Martin, and someone they can pick up in free agency to stem the tide offensively.
Yep.
Miami has a very good chance to get back, because we've discussed the Eastern Conference is really not that strong at this point.
Right.
And it kind of feels like that Miami's going to be right back there again as long as Jimmy Butler is playing his best in the playoffs.
Yep. But again, they're going to have the same task the rest of the league is going to have in figuring out Denver. And, you know, you look at the Western Conference, and it's a thing where it's kind of funny, because the team that maybe could give them the toughest tussle next year is the one that didn't even make it out of the first round. It's funny how this happens sometimes. But Sacramento, they're kind of doing it the same way with Sabonis and the game that he's been displaying. Stylistically, looking pretty similar to Jokic anyways. Sacramento couldn't make it past Golden State. But Golden State, enough said with all of the issues that they're going to have right now. The Lakers trying to improve off of what they have, and after that sweep, they have to improve to a decent degree. Being able to improve at all off of that looks pretty tough. The Clippers, the health of those guys, enough said. Memphis, who you and I were saying was going to be the next big thing out west, minus their problems, they could be, but they're not minus their problems. San Antonio is a couple of years away, even with Wembanyama, although I'm calling it. I think they could be a play-in team as early as next year. New Orleans, they could be looking to move on from Zion already. Minnesota, the experiment they did didn't work with the two big guys. On and on and on and on and on. Me and you sitting here putting over Denver to the degree that we are, it's not just because they are objectively a great team and potentially a historically great team right now, and a team that could be going for a three-peat but for the health of their two of their big players the last couple of years. It's also the landscape in the West and in the East. There's an awful lot of teams in both conferences that we thought were a lot stronger than they were as recently as a couple months ago.
And I kind of feel like, too, and one team that you didn't get to mention, Rick, would be the Phoenix Suns.
They're
obviously legit. It'll be Booker and Durant going at it again. And we'll see how that team builds. But then we've discussed their issue, too, is that to get acquired Durant, they traded away a lot of their great bench reserve players. And that's the thing. When there are times, and we've seen this in the NBA better than anything, and better than any league, there will always be one team that gets a nice run of weaker competition to have a better opportunity to win multiple titles at a period of time. In Denver right now, I'm not going to say that the rest of the West or the Eastern Conference is weaker dramatically. It's just there's no, in my opinion, all-world beating team outside of Denver at this point. So you have to make the base assessment that as long as they continue to stay healthy, and as long as there is no sort of major shakeup with any of these other franchises, that they should easily have a good chance to be in the finals in the next 4 to 5 seasons.
Well, yeah, and I think that's an excellent point, because you look at it, I mean, in the 80s, Lakers, Celtics, to a certain extent, 76ers as well. In the 2000s, Lakers, Spurs. like, I don't see the counterpoint right now. I mean, I'm not saying it's like the 90s where the Jordan Bulls, and before everybody lines up to call me a hater, you know it's true. He never played one team from 91 on that was anywhere near as good as what the Bulls were. He didn't really have a rival at that point. And the fact that he played as many different teams as he did in the finals kind of makes my point for me on that. So we might be getting to where Denver may not even have much of a natural rival the next couple of years, because, again, you look at the run that they had in the playoffs here, and it's a substantial gap. We keep coming back to this. And if anybody's tired of us putting over Denver, tough toenails, because it's the truth.
Right. And if we had to project out the team that has the best opportunity, I would say it's Boston, but we have no idea how their core is going to look moving forward. And there's just, it's really hard right now to really see a team competing with Denver with just all the positives that the Nuggets have at this period of time.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like if you just watch them as a franchise and how the team has grown, it just, again, this looks like it's going to be a very hefty run for the Denver Nuggets. And congrats to them and their fans. They've been fantastic ever since, you know, I would say probably the early 2019 series with the Blazers where they lost in the second round. It was just, they're a great team.
Yeah,
and they're going to be a great team moving forward, barring any sort of major problems.
Yep, and we talked about it. I mean, a franchise that's basically just been wallpaper since they came into the NBA in 76. Now, we were talking about this in the finals preview. Yeah, there was the stretch where they had Carmelo Anthony, and they did make it to the conference finals the one time. But, I mean, the fact that the Carmelo Anthony Nuggets never really amounted to much of anything, were never really a serious threat throughout the 2000s, kind of makes my point for me on that this is a franchise that's just been nondescript, despite, again, excellent individual performances from time to time. You know, stretches like Carmelo Anthony's time there, Fat Lever, some of the other players, Dan Issel a little bit earlier on. I mean, they had noteworthy guys, Alex English certainly, but it's a thing where, you know, it just in the end comes back to, they just sort of existed. They were just there for the longest period of time, and now they're a potential dynasty in the making. But on the whole threat of a dynasty, and again, you're 9-0 in the last 9 NBA Finals, predicting them here on the show. We have had an amazing recap here, but in that sense of you got to be greedy to have a dynasty, I am going to be greedy in this moment, Ben Chu, to make this an all-time great segment that we're doing. I want you to kind of recap a little bit of a point that you made to me a couple days ago that I was unaware of. This whole thing here, the game in 2021 where there ended up being the fateful injury to Jamal Murray, that being against Golden State, and that Steph Curry missing a shot might be the only thing that helped them to win a title the next year because Denver was out of the mix without Jamal Murray.
Right. And it's a game that everyone remembers for an AC. That was the game where Murray tore his ACL.
Mm-hmm.
And in that game, pretty much Golden State led throughout it. Denver came back. And then at the tail end of that game, it was relatively close. I'm pretty sure what it was, Rick, it was that at the two-minute mark, Golden State was up 10 points.
Okay.
And Curry had a wide-open three that would have just sealed the game, causing Mike Malone to send out his reserves. But he missed it, and then Denver went on a mini run, and then the game got down to, it was like a 7-point game with about 1:35 to go, and that's when Murray went to the basket and tore his ACL. So it's really interesting to see how one shot can really sort of define these teams and these franchises, and we're going to remember this too of how the Nuggets played in this finals was just in terms of Jamal Murray making big shots for the Nuggets when they needed to, specifically against the Lakers. And it just kind of feels like to me that if you just look at this, how this franchise, and we've seen this too, the NBA is a copycat league, so we're going to see a lot of teams go after bigger players who have that ability to play, make, and pass the basketball.
Yep.
But it's going to be very hard, in my opinion, to find someone who's that similar to Jokic with that sort of build, with that sort of agility. It's you know, like we said, we've discussed if Shaq was more of a, you know, passing savant, he could have been like Jokic too. So
yeah, true.
It's a very interesting time in the league, Rick. We always go through these runs of we don't know how things are going to play out.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like now that we've moved from the Golden State dynasty to maybe the beginning of the Nuggets dynasty. So it's going to be, if we've seen anything, and based on the ratings, some of the best playoff ratings we've seen since the pandemic, fans are tuning in regardless. So,
well, again, watching Denver, I mean, they're a more watchable team right now as opposed to a lot of the teams out there, because, I mean, they hoist their fair share of threes, obviously, but it's a thing where they're not just kind of jacking them. I mean, that was the whole thing here, criticism in the Boston series, is that their bad games, they were just running down, jacking it up, losing the rebound, and it goes back the other way. That, again, the whole space and pace thing. I mean, I have some friends that are, you know, kind of old timers in their mentality who hate the modern game. It's all just guys jacking up threes and then nobody's playing defense. And I mean, they may be old timers in their mentality, but there's a lot of people that share that thought, Ben Chu. And you look at a team like Denver, and stylistically, they're one of the more watchable teams in the league. And again, what Jokic does, I mean, I've jokingly sort of compared this to like the Harlem Globetrotters of like just, you know, the sheer kind of, you know, it's a different kind of a thing watching a team that operates, watching a guy like Jokic being able to run the offense the way that he does. And there's just an element of them, curiosity, watchability, whatever, in terms of their style, that may help the league the next couple of years, at least marginally in the ratings, that Denver doesn't play the same style that some people find alienating today.
Right, and I also feel like, too, that Denver, since they are, it's weird to say it because we always talk about market size in the NBA, but they're a big, it's a big city.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much, I would say, most people would know it as like an airport hub.
And, right.
You know, the birthplace, not the birthplace, but essentially the Broncos dynasty. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the league puts forth the Nuggets, because up to this point, since many people predicted a Lakers-Celtics finals, that was sort of the major narratives that a lot of the sports media was pushing, and now the media is now going to have to shift towards, will the Denver Nuggets be the next great NBA dynasty? So it's going to be very interesting to see. You're going to see a lot more Nuggets games on TV, and it's very apparent that I think a lot of people who are not diehard NBA fans don't get the opportunity to watch the Nuggets because they were always late start time. So we'll see them a lot more in prime time, and they'll probably be featured in the first ABC primetime Saturday or Sunday game of the year. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the league builds the Nuggets up and how the rest of the league is in a very parity level status at this point. So it's going to be really interesting to see if who is going to be their main competitor or rival is going to pop up, whether it's in the Western Conference or in the Eastern Conference.
I'm going to make a prediction on that as far as TV goes, and that being, I think you're going to see a disproportionate number of Nuggets road games on national TV next year, because I'm thinking specifically the Eastern and the Central time zone, the games that will be on in the earlier spot. So, I mean, you know, obviously, when they're playing Boston, national TV, when they're playing Miami, national TV, but you may get some other ones in the mix here as well, potentially Cleveland, other teams like that, I think. Memphis, even though they're in the Western Conference, time zone-wise, it fits what I'm talking about here. I think that that's going to be the way to sort of alleviate the concern about them being a Mountain time zone team, is if a lot of their they'll have some home games that'll be on in the second spot nationally, but you can fill an awful lot of games in the first time slot nationally, the early spot, just by going road.
Right, and it's going to be interesting to see what those games will be and how many additional games the Nuggets will get, because we've seen this too. When you become a dynasty or a champion, you get a disproportional amount of games broadcast across all the main media markets. So,
well, and it's a thing too where we'll have to see we'll know by fall, I think, as far as what's happening with Jokic and the way that he's being received nationally, because again, you know, the coming out party for the casual fans, basically, and for the people who, you know, don't know as much about the NBA and just kind of hear what they hear about the finals, this is the most they've heard about them. Obviously, you know, regular basketball fans have known about this guy and his greatness for a long period of time, but well, like I said, the curiosity factor as far as how he plays, that he does things that other guys can't do, as well as his persona. The whole kind of deadpan thing afterwards, and like, oh, well, work is done now. And the sportsmanship part of it, too, that he spent his initial moments as a champion over there congratulating Miami players individually and coaches and everyone before he went and celebrated with his own team. So the fact that he is not the traditional star hero at all, and again, and this is going to sound like a criticism of LeBron, but, you know, the way that LeBron celebrates, the way that LeBron conducts himself, whatever, Jokic's persona is so far removed from LeBron's persona, and LeBron's persona is one, let's face it, that a lot of people deem to be polarizing. So it'll be interesting to see how much people rally around Jokic. I mean, he's a vanilla person personally as far as the whole star persona, and he has no interest in being a mainstream star. But that in and of itself can endear you to a lot of people. So it'll be very curious to see if there becomes this grassroots kind of a thing of rallying around a guy who is the greatest player in the world right now, but certainly doesn't carry himself like he is.
Right, and the big thing, and I've already started to see, like, the rumblings and grumblings of fans on the media, especially with a lot of talk about, you know, him accidentally losing the finals trophy and finals MVP trophy, and just sort of this whole perceived lackadaisical, I'm not obsessed with the game of basketball type mindset. I have a feeling it's going to run a little bit concurrent in terms of sort of the Tim Duncan mindset of that. I'm not going to be loud and brash, and I'm going to just do my job and win, and this is not the only thing I care about. It's going to be very interesting to see how that sort of breaks down for fans, but for the league just as a whole, and we've discussed this too, the league is always healthy when there's parity.
Yep.
And even though the Nuggets are the best team, there are going to be a lot of good NBA teams trying to claw at their heels and try and get a championship.
Well, yeah, and it's a thing where, and look, it makes it interesting, too, because, again, for as much as the league encourages rivalries and things like that, again, when you've got a thing like, you know, this is a situation where, again, I'm a Cavs fan, so you expect me to loathe Golden State, which I certainly have, but it's a thing where I think, like, Golden State was also a team where, much like LeBron is polarizing, they were polarizing. Steph Curry with the whole mouthpiece crap in and out of his mouth. Draymond Green, enough said there, right? So it's like Golden State was a team where it wasn't difficult to loathe them. But like Denver, it's a thing where the best player in the world on the best team in the world, a behemoth, but he's not going to be real easy for anybody to demonize. Even if people are a little bit, you know, like you said, some people might not like what they perceive as being lackadaisical about these things. But again, the way that guy transformed his body, he sure as heck isn't lackadaisical because he worked to get to the point that he was. He was a raw, you know, bunch of clay here that he and Denver collectively molded into the best player in the world. He's certainly not lackadaisical, but the perception of him, that won't be enough to get people to loathe him to that degree. It almost feels like it has to be a thing where the league is going to want, anyways, for somebody in his position to be Darth Vader, and I just don't see it. Because it's a thing of, like, you just look at it, and it's like, unless you have a specific axe to grind, how could anybody hate the Joker?
Right. And ultimately, I think the biggest thing, and this is probably, I'm already predicting this right now, it's going to come more full circle that fans are going to dislike him more just because he's not a basketball-obsessed individual, right?
Okay, sure.
I think that's going to be the line that fans are going to start to use in terms of like, oh, he, you know, he has all these God-given great abilities. What he should care about, this is the only thing in his life. Well, he doesn't have that Kobe Mamba mentality sort of, you know, get it, scream in your face and berate you for a reason. And it's more in terms of at the period of time with him is that he's a very likable player, and I think at some point fans will find a way to demonize anything. We're in the social media age, Rick. That's how this shit works.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I'm just being honest. This is how it works. There'll be a way. Someone will be able to figure it out. But at the end of the day, I think the league, it's really healthy for them. You know, it's great for them to have another big man superstar, because the league is always healthy when they have big men who are superstars at the end of the day.
Well, there's a way that this could go as far as him being a disliked figure, and this is, I'm just gonna touch on this because you and I both loathe the whole low-hanging fruit, lowest common denominator, clickbait stuff here. So I'm going to use a euphemism for what I'm talking about here. But having the consensus best player in the world be, I'll use the euphemism, a European, as opposed to anything else. That obviously the vast swath of the fan base in the United States that follows basketball, loves basketball, whatever. And again, when I say European, I'm not talking about this in a nationalistic sense. I'm talking about this in another sense that's a lot uglier than that. Having that be him, that he's the best right now, that's a thing where there could be resentment going on those lines. There's been talk already about whether or not he got votes or lost votes for MVP based on that the last couple of years, which I think the fact that he got any votes on it, I think that's a sick thing to say and everything like that. I think he lost votes this year just because people were bored of voting for the same guy, which is unfortunate. But the fault lines that can exist in some very ugly ways, I hate to say it, but that's one way where the guy could become demonized the next couple of years.
Right, and I think, too, whether it's, you can even take race out of it entirely, we do not like to see sustained success in sports.
Yes.
We like parity. That's what people like.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, you know, especially in the NBA more than any other sport, you get these dynastic teams. And I'll use the analogy in the NFL. When the 49ers won in the 80s and the Cowboys won in the 90s, they got demonized for their long-term success. That's essentially how I feel that's going to occur. It's not going to be a direct shot at Joker. It's going to be more direct shots at the Nuggets and the thing. It's just we, at least recently, have had more polarizing superstars. And going back to Tim Duncan, he's probably been the last sort of superstar type player who didn't talk a lot. Reminds me a little bit of Jokic in a sense, too. So it's going to be interesting how people will spin the stories and how the media, sports media, interprets these Nuggets moving forward, what style of dynasty are going to be.
Yeah.
Will they be the dynasty everyone loves? Will they be the dynasty that everyone hates? It's kind of the soap operatic narrative of sports that we have. So it's going to be very interesting to see how media plus fans plus long-term success casts the Nuggets in the lore of the league, essentially.
Yeah, it is going to be. All these factors come into play. It's going to be fascinating to watch because, again, there are obviously the comparisons you're making to San Antonio and that run, and I see them too, and from the blandness of the top guy to the rest of the team, the great teamwork there, but not being a bunch of colorful guys. I see it, and I agree with it, but I think this is still uncharted territory as far as the specific makeup of this Nuggets team and the way they're going about things. And yes, to see it play out the next couple of years is going to be fascinating. And even with Denver being a solid favorite the way that they were this year, and there have been some solid favorites in the last 9 years, but again, it's never a layup to get the 9-0 regardless of that, because the two times where I was wrong and you were right were 2019 and 2021. 2019, you went out on a gigantic limb. 2021 kind of felt like a pick 'em. I saw a lot of people going both ways between the Bucks and the Suns. So that was one where, I mean, statistically, you probably had about a coin flip chance of being right on that one. 2019, people would have said you had a substantially less than 50% chance of being right on that one. And oh, by the way, the 4 years of the Cavs-Warriors, we got it right all four times, which means we both went out on a limb in 2016 for that one. So there have been a couple ones in the last 9 years where there were solid favorites and you went with them, but on a minimum of three occasions, you went out on a limb there. So the congratulations for 9-0 has to be endless and heartfelt because of everything you did to make it happen.
Well, I appreciate you putting me over the top, Rick, but the only thing that matters is next year. Keep it going. Keep the streak alive.
Well, every time you're on between now, this will be like the tour to 10-0, right? We'll be referencing this every time you're on.
The tour to 10-0.
It is. This is going to be like Kareem's retirement season. They're giving him the motorcycle in this arena and everything like that. This is going to be your victory tour to 10-0 leading up to it. And it is going to be great, obviously, continuing to cover the NBA with you. A wonderful segment, as per always. Thank you so much, Ben Chu.
I appreciate it, Rick. Thank you, as always.
Much appreciated, Ben. Thank you, and thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1625.